What's happening, everybody, and welcome to today's edition of Swag Talk, the show where we cover the swag inside and out. I'm your host, Charles Wells, coming at you, and we're going to continue this tour around the swag as we talk about the other newcomer to the league, the Florida A&M Rattlers. Before we get into that, let's go ahead and get everything out of the way. Excuse me, facebook.com/swagtalk, instagram.com/swagtalk, swagtalk76@gmail.com is the email address. Also, you can catch Swag Talk on YouTube. It's Swag Talk Show that can be found on YouTube. You go ahead and subscribe to the channel if you haven't done so. Hit the notification bell and to be alerted to any content that I upload. And also, if you would like to show love to the show, we have a Cash App. You can hit us up at $/SwagTalk if you choose to. And that's about it with the little intro and all of the housekeeping. Get that on out the way. We're going to talk Rattlers. Florida A&M in 2019, they felt like they were the best team in HBCU football. They really had a really successful season. They went 9-2 that year. And they actually were able to beat North Carolina A&T and Southern, who won the West Division of the SWAC. So they beat two teams who were very successful in their respective conferences. Their only loss in conference was obviously to Bethune-Cookman, extending that losing streak that they have. And the other loss there was FBS money game loss to UCF. So they had a very good season offensively. They were very good, led by their former quarterback, Ryan Stanley. They averaged 32 points per game on offense, and on allowing 27, they passed for almost 300 yards per game, and they had a very, very good offense, and they just were able to take care of business in a lot of different ways. They ran for about 105 yards per game, so they were definitely a pass first team. Defensively, they were pretty stout as well. They allowed 131 yards per game on defense. So rushing, that is, on defense, and about 233 passing. So they played a very good style of football, and they were able to win games that they needed to win and put themselves in a position. But unfortunately, they were ineligible for the conference race. So, I mean, to win the conference. So they had to sit home instead of going to the Celebration Bowl. So that's definitely a sore spot for them, because this is a team that felt like they could definitely be a factor and probably have won the Celebration Bowl. And like I said, they threw for 30 touchdowns on the season, 9 interceptions defensively, 17 touchdowns allowed in there, and 15 interceptions. So they did a good job of forcing turnovers. Like I said, they didn't run the ball very, very much. 354 carries. They averaged only 3.3 yards per carry. So that's definitely something that's going to have to improve this season. But defensively, they only allowed 3.8 yards per carry. So they did a good job of stopping the run. They didn't run the ball very much. So I think that's going to be a factor this season. Total offense, 396 yards per game for the Rattlers, 365 for the opponents. They were 44% third down conversion percent. Opponents also 44%. Fourth down conversions, 40% for the Rattlers, 52% for the opponents. FAMU fumbled 9 times and lost 5, giving them a total of 14 turnovers. The opponents fumbled 15 times and lost 6, giving them a total of 21 turnovers. So they had a positive turnover ratio. Sacks, the Rattlers had 19. They only allowed 8 sacks, so they did a really good job of protecting the quarterback and making sure that they were able to make the plays and take advantage of the receivers that they had. Red zone, 34 of 42, 30 of 35 for the opponents. So, like I said, if you look at what Florida A&M did, they did a lot of good things. They played a very aggressive style of football, and they did a good job of passing the ball and running when they had to. Obviously, if you don't have a great running number, but you're winning games, then something that you're doing is working. And they definitely had a successful season, even without carrying the ball much. They didn't have anybody with 100 carries. Bishop Barnett was a leading rusher. He had 97 carries for 372 yards, 3.8 yards per carry, two touchdowns. Devon Kendrick, 73 carries, 346 yards, 4.7 yards per carry, three touchdowns. Terrell Jennings, 83 carries, 256 yards, six touchdowns. Like I said before, in the passing game, Ryan Stanley was the man. He was 193 of 321 for 60% completion, 23 touchdowns, seven interceptions, 2,566 yards. Rashawn McKay was the second leading passer. He was 52 of 73, six touchdowns, two interceptions, 538 yards. So that's a guy who I think that you can look to actually get some serious playing time. He may even start. Obviously, it's not been set in stone that he's gonna start at this point, but he will go into the season. He will go into the season as the number one guy in terms of taking reps. So that's something that you really can take advantage of if he's able to really control the job and do things the way that the coaches want him to do it. So they have a few other guys in the system that's ready to play, but they're not quite there yet. So the offense is definitely gonna revolve around a guy like Xavier Smith, a wide receiver, 77 catches, 1,159 yards, average 15 yards per catch, 11 touchdowns, 105 yards per game. David Manigo, 41 catches, 575 yards, five touchdowns. Azende Ray, 30 catches, 304 yards, five touchdowns. So these are some guys who really are able to be able to make some things happen, and they're not, they're not really big guys, but they're guys that can, make some kits, some big plays. A guy like Manigo, he's 6'3", so he's a big body receiver that they can take advantage of. And having receivers that are experienced is definitely going to go a long way in helping your team grow and develop as the season goes on, because you obviously need some help with a new quarterback, and having a receiver that you can count on definitely helps in that aspect. Defensively, the name that stops and ends with this defense is Marquise Bell. He's a redshirt senior. He has 61 tackles, two forced fumbles, led the MEAC with five interceptions. He's a preseason All-American pick, NFL draft prospect. He was selected second team All-SWAC due to not playing in the spring, but he's a guy that's gonna definitely clean up some mistakes that anybody makes, and he's gonna make plays on his own. Ronaldo Flowers also earned All-SWAC honors on second team as a defensive lineman. Savion Williams is a guy who transferred into Florida A&M from Tennessee, so that's a body that they can add to their rotation on defense, and I'm sure he'll get a lot of time. On the offensive line, they added Mike Arnold from Florida State. So that's another piece that can help. Like I said, the biggest loss on the season, obviously losing a quarterback like Ryan Stanley, it definitely puts you in a bad spot, but it kind of sets you back a little bit. But they have an opportunity to grow with a new quarterback, and they're gonna find a way to win, because Coach Simmons is a guy that's gonna get the most out of this team, and he's a very, very proud and successful guy. So he's not gonna let the team flounder, and they're gonna be in the midst of this. I do feel that, as I said about every team who hasn't played yet, playing the first game in the spring. I mean, not playing in the spring and playing their first game after 2 years is gonna be a little bit of a little bit of an adjustment. But I think that they'll be able to get themselves going. Obviously, the schedule early doesn't do them any favors. When you have a game against Jackson State to open up your season, That pretty much puts you out of the frying pan into the fire, right out the gate. The Sunday, September 5th, ESPN2 broadcast the Orange Blossom Classic. This is one of the biggest games of the season, and it's the first game. And that's the cliche. The first game is the biggest game, but this is a game that is huge for the standings. It's huge for confidence for both teams. It's huge for the league in general, because there's going to be a lot of eyes on this game. It's really this is a game that I it's like I can go either way, because I don't think with Florida and them, not so if they go with McKay, they're not necessarily breaking in a new quarterback. This is a guy that took a lot of snaps and threw a good bit of passes on the season. So you replace you got a guy coming in that's passing, that has thrown the ball at least 73 times. He's our so I mean that's not heavy numbers, but he did have a good game against North Carolina A&T, so he does have some on-field experience. So if they go with that, then that won't be as much of a drop-off. Jackson State is a basically an all-new team. I mean, they do have some pieces returning from the fall, but they're playing a first-time quarterback in college, and a lot of guys who have not played together. And you can say practice, 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 but game is different than practice. So I, like I said, I would lean more heavily toward Florida and them as I get closer to the season. But it's not a bad choice to pick Jackson State to win this game. I just don't know really, honestly. But I think I'm gonna pick Jackson State to open the season up with a W. I just have a feeling. Like I said, obviously as we get closer to the season, that may change. But just for the sake of this preview, I'll pick the Tigers. September 11th, Florida A&M opens up their season at home against Fort Valley State. That's going to be a game that they win. Like I said, that's a Division II SIAC opponent, so they definitely should win that game. The last time these two teams played was in 2019. Florida A&M won 57 to 20. They've only played three times, so they three times, and all three Florida A&M has won. The 2011 game was a 6-point game. The 2018 game was a 41-7 win. So not not very close. Florida A&M a bounce back. If they lose the Jackson State game, they bounce back. If they win that game, obviously they'll continue to roll. September 18th, they go to Tampa to take on USF. USF's a bad team. They didn't have, I think they may have won one game in the spring. I mean, excuse me, in the fall. But right now, I'm hesitant to pick Florida A&M to win this game, but I do think they have a shot if the quarterback play is well, and defense is able to get the stops that they need to keep them in this game. I will say this, if there's no restrictions on crowd, the Florida A&M is gonna have a great crowd there. They may even have an advantage at home. I mean, had an advantage there because USF doesn't have a great home atmosphere, and there's a lot of Rattlers in Tampa. So I expect Florida A&M to at least turn out in that aspect and make a game out of this. October 2nd, they return home to take on Alabama State. I think Florida A&M will win this game, but any game I pick against Alabama State, I pick it with the caveat of Alabama State is probably going to be in most games they play. That's just the way that they are. I think they're playing for their coach's life and job. Obviously not life, but coaching for his job. Because I think Coach Ely may be on a hot seat. They have a new AD, so that's going to be something to keep an eye out on. But I think Florida A&M will win this game. This is an old SIAC matchup, so these two teams historically are familiar with each other, but they're not really familiar with each other in recent years. They haven't played each other very often recently, so that's just a matchup that's going to be a new thing to kind of take care of is to excuse me, a new thing to kind of watch develop and grow. So Florida A&M will pick up that W there. October 9th, they host South Carolina State, former MEAC opponent. These two teams, some historically they've matched up against each other fairly well. South Carolina State has given Florida A&M some problems. They had a 4-point South Carolina State loss by four in 2019. So they lost. They actually beat FAMU in 2018. And they had a nice long winning streak against Florida A&M for a while. So they actually have beat Florida A&M, I think it looked like six straight times before they lost to them in 2019. So this is obviously a matchup that doesn't go Florida A&M's way for the most part. But I think this is a team that's going to be able to win these type of games. Obviously, you don't 100% know, but I don't think South Carolina State offensively is where they need to be to challenge. Defensively, I think they're very good, and you know they'll slow down Florida A&M, but maybe not enough to get the W, especially in Tallahassee at this point. October 16th, Alabama A&M hosts Florida A&M. Now this is a big game. Obviously, this is a huge game for the division because I think it's a three-team race. So whoever comes out of that three-team mix with the best record is going to most likely win the division. I picked Florida A&M to win this game because I think Alabama A&M is going to beat Jackson State in the week before. So I feel like having them win this game, coming off of that big win for Alabama A&M, there's a possibility of a letdown. And I think the Rattlers will be able to take advantage of that. October 23rd, they go to Itabena to take on Mississippi Valley. Valley's tough at home, but I don't think they're going to have enough to make this a serious game. They'll make it interesting for a while, but they won't be able to get it done there. October 30th is homecoming. They host Grambling. Grambling, we honestly don't know what Grambling we're going to get, but you can never count Grambling out. But I think Florida A&M will win this game. Grambling still has some issues to work out, but they're trying to get there. So we'll see how this goes, but I really think that Florida A&M will win this. It's homecoming, so I think they'll be ready to play. November 6th, they head to Baton Rouge, and they take on Southern. And this is a matchup that obviously Southern hasn't had the most success against Florida A&M. These two teams haven't really played very often in recent years. Actually, this is only like the fourth time they played since 2011. So they used to play all the time, but around 2001, 2002, the matchup kind of went away when Florida A&M tried to do their Division I move, and they had a home and home, and they had a home and home, or are they basically a MEAC SWAC challenge game and a home game at Southern in 2007 and 2008, I believe. FAMU typically is successful in Baton Rouge. I'm going to pick Southern because I thought Southern had a good chance to win that game in 2019. They fell behind big to Florida A&M, but were able to come back and take the lead. Brian Stanley led the Rattlers down 99 yards down the field to score the winning touchdown. So I don't think that they're going to be able to victimize Southern through the air like they did in that particular game. So I think Southern will pull off that victory and help themselves in the SWAC race. November 13th, the Rattlers go to Pine Bluff to take on UAPB. I think Florida A&M will win this game, but Pine Bluff is tough at home. And depending on how the beginning of their season goes, this could be a game that could really be a challenging game for Florida A&M. But I think they'll be able to navigate it and send themselves into the Florida Classic with a good shot at a very successful season, and possibly a division championship if things fall their way. And obviously on November 20th, they go to Orlando to take on Bethune-Cookman in the Florida Classic. I said it in my Bethune-Cookman preview, and I'm gonna say it here. It's time for the streak to end, right? I mean, it can't get to 10, can it? So I'm gonna say. No, I'm going to say the streak ends at 9, and Florida A&M wins this game. And they set themselves up with a very nice season. I'm looking at a 9-2 season with eight and three season, 6-2 in conference. Could possibly be a division division champ with a record like that, and the fact that I really feel that, especially in the East, I feel like the winner's going to take a couple losses, so they may still be able to put themselves in position to win the division even with a 6-2 record. I would say, obviously, the best case scenario would be I don't really think it's an impossible feat to beat USF, but I'm not really factoring that one in right now. I think it's gonna be a competitive game regardless, but I would say 10-1 is the best case scenario. The worst case scenario would be probably 7-4, and that's if the offense doesn't really get going, and they struggle to win some games early. Maybe they start off a little slow, because the possibility of taking some losses early is there. Obviously, the Jackson State game is a game that can be a winnable or losable game. The USF game is a game that can be lost. Alabama State's a wild card type of game, because you don't ever really know what to expect from that team. South Carolina State's a game that's tough. Alabama A&M's a game that's tough. So that's five of your first six games can easily be losses. Now, I don't think that they're going to lose them all, so don't come at me like that. But I really feel like it's a possibility of a slow start. You know, if they lose the Jackson game, you know, how do they respond? You know, if they lose to Jackson and come out kind of sluggish against Fort Valley State, then that can bleed into the rest of the season. If they start off with a W, then they may be able to have some momentum to roll throughout the season, because that early to that September and October is not easy at all. And the good thing is that the bulk of those games are in Florida, so that helps a lot. The second part of the season is a little bit easier. You know, you have Valley, Grambling, we don't know exactly what they're going to be. Pine Bluff, another wild card type of team. I don't think they'll be bad by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm not sure if they'll be conference contender good, or just, you know, hang around in the middle and cause a few problems type of team. But they'll be, you know, that's not a tough game. On the road, it's a little bit tougher to navigate. Going to Southern is a more difficult matchup. And obviously playing Bethune-Cookman in a game that you've lost to them nine straight times is never an easy automatic thing. So this schedule, it doesn't do them a whole lot of favors. The off week is in between USF and Alabama State. I think they may, you know, it might have been better to have an off week later in the season. Because after that, they have eight games in a row after that. So they play three games, and then they have an off week, and then the rest of the season is straight. So including two straight road games with West Division opponents. So this is not an easy schedule. You know, it's definitely not much room for growth. This is obviously they're not really giving you an opportunity to develop a quarterback or, you know, get a guy who may not have played a whole lot, but has played, you know, a good bit to be able to play and develop. But this, you know, obviously they're going to have to give themselves an opportunity to grow and win games. So with that being said, we're going to go ahead and get on out of here. And don't forget, we have a YouTube video dropping today, also covering Florida A&M. Sunday, we talk about the G-Men of Grambling. Tomorrow, we have a YouTube video coming of a new program that we're starting called All the Smoke with my homie DJ. We're going to sit back and just chop it up and kind of just talk about, you know, whatever's going on in the swag world. That's coming at you tomorrow. So we have a lot of stuff coming down the pike. Obviously, you know, let's talk some swag football and enjoy what we have. And we'll see you guys on Sunday with another edition of Swag Talk, the show where we cover the swag inside and out. I am out.